Welcome to the 71st episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Daniel Pine, author of the novel A Hole in the Ground, Owned by a Liar. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Daniel Pine. Pine is the author of the new novel, A Hole in the Ground, Owned by a Liar. Pine's earlier novel, 29 Palms, was hailed as a California noir novel. Pine is not just a novelist, however. He's also a successful screenwriter, including Any Given Sunday, the remake of The Manchurian Candidate, and many other successful films. And Pine is also the executive producer of the new Fox television show, Alcatraz. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, I wondered at the beginning, could you read the first two or three paragraphs of A Hole in the Ground, Owned by a Liar, your new novel?
Sure, I would love to. This is the prologue, and it begins this way. A small mountain airport shrouded in fog, dusted with summer snow. Visibility of about 20 feet, but cold, but no wind. July in the Rockies, what the fuck? Is it safe to fly? Three businessmen in heavy hooded fur-lined coats, waiting, stamping their feet on the tarmac near a sleddy red Bell 206L3 Long Ranger helicopter just warming up. Stan Beecham, salesman, squat, fit, gym-sculpted, hair-deprived, slicker than a nonstick pan, squinted up into the cerulean sky, tugged the brim of his baseball cap, and made a well-considered and thoughtful downturn of mouth.
Great. Well, if the listeners haven't heard about your new novel yet, can you describe what the novel's about?
I wish I was better at succinct descriptions of anything. It is the story of two brothers, one of whom, in a fit of early midlife crisis, buys a gold mine on eBay and proceeds to kind of fool around with it, much to the dismay of his younger brother, who is worried that his older brother is just going to create another embarrassment for himself. And it's basically the story of these two guys, their relationship. They have a kind of murky past and an uncertain future. And in the middle of them, in a kind of awkward love triangle, is a woman named Raina, who sort of falls for both brothers.
Right. Well, so two guys buy a gold mine off of eBay. I think most people who know about your career as both a screenwriter and a novelist would immediately ask the question, did this novel start out as a screenplay first, or did you know from the beginning that you were writing a novel?
That's a complicated question. I began my career as a writer and always intending to be a novelist, intending to be a prose writer. And I kind of came to screenwriting sideways. I always loved movies. I loved dramatic writing. But originally I thought I would do screenwriting just as a way to support myself while I wrote prose, while I mastered the art of prose. And then screenwriting sort of became a career in and of itself. So now when I approach the novel, I don't really approach them in different ways. I mean, the way I approach a story is basically the same, whether it's a screenplay or a novel. It just so happens that the novel is a story that perhaps wouldn't make a movie that a studio would invest $30 million in. And a screenplay might be something that is slightly more visual than a novel, but not. So yes, I thought about this as a screenplay, and it seemed to me that it would be better in prose form. So I approached it in that way. But, you know, I think some people can separate them out, and I've found that it's better for me if I just think of them as stories, and then whatever method I can tell that story best with is the method I choose.
Right, right. Well, you just mentioned the idea that, you know, if you write a story, that for it to have potential as a screenplay, if I understand you correctly, it has to have a certain appeal or a wide appeal that a studio would invest, as you mentioned, $30 million. I'm just curious, given your success in Hollywood and the screenplays that you've written and have been filmed and made it to the big screen, and now that you're working on Alcatraz, what's the appeal to a novel to you, to writing a novel?
It's the greatest thing, because it's the only place where the words that I write are read and processed unmitigated by a reader. When you write a screenplay, when you write a teleplay, it's basically a blueprint, sometimes a very detailed blueprint, but it's a document that gets a bunch of people to agree to make something. And then it's interpreted over and over again by the actors, by the director, by the producer, by the studio. You're part of a larger collaborative process. But the first time I saw, And I knew this sort of intellectually, but emotionally, the first time that I saw the first words of 29 Palms, my first book, printed in a book, and I suddenly realized that they weren't going to change. No, that was it. It was the
no
greatest
more
feeling.
No notes. Well,
yeah, no one else, no one between me and my intended audience. And it was an amazing feeling, because, you know, I take a lot of pride in it, and I care a lot about my screenplays, and I like to think that they read very well, but it's, my audience is limited. I'm like a poet at the Medici summer house, you know, writing for 30 people, and those happen to be the people who make decisions to make a movie or make a TV show, but nobody else gets to read it, nobody else gets to appreciate it, they just hear about it. So writing books is still, for me, the purest expression of how I think and how I tell a story and how I create characters. And it's also really fun to be able to paint pictures with words and create images in people's heads rather than describe an image that is then shot by a camera.
Right. Well, given your obvious love for novels, as you just described it, do you have other novels planned, or have you written others that haven't been published?
I do. I have a third one that I'm almost done with. As I've gone through my career as a screenwriter, I collect stories. I collect ideas and stories and things I want to write. So having now opened up into a new area, I'm kind of excited, because some of those stories are gonna be better books than they may ever have been movies. So yeah, I have one almost done and another one that I'm already thinking about as I approach that.
And I mean, not to kind of go back to this question again, but, you know, as you're thinking about these novels, do you also have ideas that when you start thinking about it, you know to yourself, like, you know, this is going to work better as a screenplay versus a novel? Or is it still just you sit down at your keyboard and it's kind of a discovery process along the way?
I tend to break them in the same way. I tend to because I spent so long writing dramatic writing, I tend to outline my stories in the same way, whether they turn into movies or into books. But yeah, I mean, there are certain ideas that seem like they're naturally maybe better told cinematically. Mm-hmm. They're not as dense. They don't have the same interior character stuff. It's just sort of a feeling. Although I have to say that I don't really think about whether my movies are commercial or not either. If I have an idea and I want to write it and I think it would make a great film, I write it, and then I hope that maybe somebody will want to make it. And then there are some ideas that I have that I think, oh, you know, that's a television idea. It's serialized. It's got great characters that you could spin a bunch of stories around, and then I'll go in that direction.
Gotcha. Well, obviously, there have always been people outside of Hollywood who are interested in the business of making movies and television, and would probably harbor a desire to work as a director or a screenwriter. I'm curious about your own personal story. How did you kind of make those first inroads and those first steps into getting into the business of writing film and TV? What was your story?
It took a while. As I said, I set out to write novels, which I was, and short stories, which I was very unsuccessful at, like most people. I collected rejection scripts. But I also had, I didn't have a lot of experience with film writing, but I loved movies. And on a lark, I applied to graduate school at UCLA in their film program and got in. So I went, and it introduced me to film writing, sort of taught me what a screenplay looked like, gave me the opportunity to study lots of classic films. And when I graduated, I thought, well, maybe this is a parallel career, something else I could pursue. And I seem to have... My prose writing is very visual, so it was not a big leap for me to write screenplays. And I spent about 2 years kicking around, writing whatever I could, working in advertising, and then teamed up with another writer who was a friend from college, and we got a break on a TV show. We went in and we pitched to them. We were really nervous, and they didn't like our pitch at all, but they gave us an idea. And we went away and we wrote like the 30-page treatment for a TV show, for a TV episode, and brought it back to them. And they were impressed that we had spent so much time on it. So they hired us to write a script and kind of built from there. I spent 5 or 6 years doing television before my first movie was made. But as I was doing television, I was still writing screenplays and sort of chipping away at the edges of the movie business. And then for a long time, I was doing both. I did television and wrote screenplays at the same time. And then about 8 years ago, I stopped writing television altogether and just wrote screenplays and started working on books. And then in the fall, Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams' company, asked if I would come on Alcatraz as a showrunner. I hadn't done it in a long time. It seemed like it might be fun. So I did it, and it's been 7 days a week, 14 hours a day ever since. And I'll be, it's been great, but I'll be happy to see it end at the end of the month.
And how has that been? I mean, obviously you just said 7 days a week, 14 hours a day.
It's been much harder, much longer hours than I thought it would be. And the television business is much more complicated than the last time I was in it. There are more people giving you notes, more people who have input. I think the stakes must be bigger. Right. So the network, the studio, Bad Robot, everyone is very involved in every aspect of the show, the writing, the casting, the cutting of shows afterward, because it's a big investment, and sure, and the payoff can be great. I mean, it's a business for that. For me, it's still just writing, still just the same job I do when I'm here home alone. But at the same time, it's been really fun. It's an idea that I don't think I ever would have had. So it's kind of fun to work on someone else's idea and try to help them bring it to a higher level.
That's great. Well, earlier you alluded to kind of your writing process. You said that you were kind of, if I remember correctly, you said that you outlined pretty methodically. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what your writing process is like. I mean, you know, what is that outlining like? Is it, you know, how does it fit in terms of, you know, kind of writing organically? If you could just talk about that a little bit.
Right. I do believe in organic writing. I don't have a formula or anything to the way that I write, and I don't have a structured day where I get up at 6 in the morning and write for 3 hours and then stop. Usually, if I get an idea like hole in the ground, my own brother actually bought a gold mine, not on eBay, in Colorado, and I got a lot of ideas from that. And then I had these two characters who were floating around in my head who were looking for a story to engage in. So I'll kind of take elements of different things, and I'll get inspired, or I'll read an article, and then I'll start to think about where that story might go. And then I'll just spin it out. I'll try to figure out what the moves would be, what the parts of it are, who the characters are, and I constantly move back and forth between the plotting and the character. In my mind, they're inseparable, because your characters are always defined by what they do, and what happens in any story is affected by who the characters are, who's going through the story, and the decisions that they make. So I don't really separate the two out and do a plot and then work on character. Generally, they each develop at about the same speed, and the character will a lot of times tell me where the story goes.
Gotcha.
Sometimes I know the ending, and sometimes I don't.
And does that process differ when you're in such a collaborative environment, such as I can only imagine with Alcatraz? I mean, you were alluding earlier to so many notes from you know, the studio, the network, and Bad Robot.
Yeah, and television, even without all those elements, television is extremely collaborative, partially by necessity, because you're doing 13 or 22 episodes in a season, and you've got to have a new script every 9 days, and you have a staff that contributes to the show. So television tends to be, you know, a lot of writers in a room throwing ideas out, and sometimes it can be great and really productive, and sometimes it can be incredibly unproductive, and the collective voice of the room a lot of times becomes the voice of the show. So
right.
it's a much different process. I mean, the basics of it are the same, the storytelling basics, the character basics, but
right.
It's a much different process. Plus, on a show that already exists, like Alcatraz, the characters exist. So you're writing someone else's characters.
Right.
You're just taking them in a different journey.
Gotcha. Well, given your experience at both Prose with your new novel and all the screenwriting, both film and television, what kind of broad tips or advice would you offer for aspiring writers?
For young writers?
Yes, for young writers.
Don't give up. It's very easy to give up. It's not easy, or everyone would do it. I think it's good to have really high goals and also very realistic goals, attainable goals. So you might have, you might aspire to win the Nobel Prize for literature, but first you've got to finish something. And to finish something, you have to write every day. I think the other advice that I there's sort of two things that I tell everybody. One is you should want to do it for free, because you may have to.
Right.
There's no guarantee of success. There's no guarantee that what you write will intersect with the commercial marketplace, or what you love and are interested in is something that everybody else will be interested in. There's Steven Spielberg and there's Jim Jarmusch, and they play to very different audiences, and they're both excellent filmmakers, but and they both love their job, and they're both equally skilled. It's just a different product, and you kind of don't have control over that part of it. So I always say, the people who succeed in any of these fields are people, I think, who would do it for free. They have to do it. There's nothing else they want to do.
Right.
And then the second part that I think is also really important is try to be as good as you can be. Don't settle.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think that because you go to the movies and you see a movie that's badly written and badly directed and it makes $500 million, or you go to the bookstore and you buy a book that's clunky and cheesy and it's pop fiction, and don't think that just because that's successful, you'll be successful if you aim low. I think it's great that there's a big variety of what people appreciate and what people like, but you want to aspire to be as good as you can be at what you do, because when you get your shot, you want to be able to take advantage of it.
Right. Well, I know in researching this interview, I read a previous interview, and I know that with screenwriting in particular, if someone gets interested in screenwriting, there's a huge body of work and belief out there of this very, what I would describe as almost kind of rigid structure to a screenplay. And I was kind of surprised when I read that you don't always buy into that. And I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
I think to a certain extent, this is my opinion, and I'm sure I'll be proved wrong. I think to a certain extent, the structures that people study and that people discover in screenplays are things that are applied after the fact. You look at a successful movie, you break it down into its component parts, and you say, oh, this is why it was successful, because it had this and this and this. But
right.
I just don't believe that that's necessarily true. I think that good storytelling has a form to it, but that's a form that can be expanded or broken or contradicted at any point. And to say that if you have your, I forget what the terms are, but your inciting incident on page
right.
15 of your screenplay and your big reversal on page 30, that you'll write a successful screenplay is just nonsense.
Right.
You'll write a successful screenplay if you write something with compelling characters that people want to get to the end of.
Right.
I remember when My Big Fat Wedding came out a few years ago. My Big Fat Greek Wedding
mm-hmm.
came out a few years ago. And for a moment, everyone in the writing, filmmaking community was kind of stunned because it broke so many screenwriting rules. It was, it didn't have Act 3. It didn't have any of the traditional earmarks. It felt like a half-finished thing by any standards that had been accepted. And within 6 months, everybody had found a way to show that it fit the formula that they were advocating. I think that those kinds of things are useful if they help you tell a good story. If it's a way that helps you organize your thoughts, or it helps you get through a block or understand a problem and solve it, great. But I've seen too many writers get hung up on it, and they start writing for those moments, and they forget that a good story, something happens on every page in a film. Every moment of a film builds to the next moment. It isn't just you wait till minute five and then something happens. Every minute until minute five, something happens. Every frame, something interesting happens.
Right.
And I think if you think about it like that, it sort of frees you up and allows you to figure out what your inner voice is telling you and the story that you want to tell. But like I said, I think a well-told story has a structure. It's just a natural thing, though. It's like when you tell a joke. If people who tell jokes well, just they have a structure to them, and that's why they work. If you break it down, yeah, you could explain why it worked after the fact, but I don't think you can construct a joke based on that. It's just it's instinct and it's spontaneity, it's creativity at its best.
Gotcha. Well, I'm curious, when you get frustrated with a writing project, do you ever think about Al Pacino's locker room speech in Any Given Sunday?
I wish I could say I wrote that speech.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I do think of that speech.
Life is a game of inches.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, it's interesting. The metaphors of that movie are true to a lot of things. It's why it was popular.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't realize that you weren't the one who wrote it.
that's a very tangled one. Although I really I love that. I love the movie.
Yeah. Great.
And, well, and I'm proud to have had a part of it, to have done a part of it.
Great. Well, where can people find information about you and your new book, Hole in the Ground, Owned by a Liar, online?
I guess at my website, www.danielpine.com, or my alt website, www.sandblast.com, which is my film company website.
Okay, well,
that's probably best.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Daniel Pine, author of the new novel, A Hole in the Ground, Owned by a Liar, and it's available in bookstores now. Daniel, thanks for doing the interview.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to my latest podcast. If you have a chance, please leave a review of the podcast in iTunes. It only takes a moment. Until next time, read some good books and be well.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.